Thank you very much. Charles Francis Adams was the son of President John Quincy Adams. I seem to have a lot of stories about American presidents, I noticed. I don't know why that is. I have no particular interest in American presidents, but there we are. But Charles Francis Adams was the son of President John Quincy Adams and the grandson of President John Adams. And Charles Francis Adams kept a diary. And one day, he entered into his diary, "Went fishing with my son today, a day wasted." But his son, Brooke Adams, also kept a diary, which can still be read to this day. And on that same day, Brooke Adams made this entry. He said, "Went fishing with my father, the most wonderful day of my life." The father thought he was wasting time while fishing with his son, but his son saw it as the greatest day of his life. And that teaches us something, regardless of the truth or otherwise of that story. I hope it's true. But it teaches us something about a father's influence over his son. And in many ways, that is what the book of Proverbs emphasizes as well. The huge benefit and influence that a father and a mother or parents have on their children. We've been looking over the last few months at Proverbs 22 verse 17 to chapter 23 verse, or 24 verse 22. And we're going through these Proverbs, and there's about 30 of them. And they're called the sayings of the wise. I'm not sure how many we've done so far, perhaps seven or eight so far. But most of them are general words of wisdom. Words of wisdom which apply to everyone. They're not personal in that sense. They're just general words of wisdom. But some, in the section we've just read, are written specifically from a parent to his son, a father to his son. And it's almost like in these sections, he brings his son in close, and he sits him on his knee, and he speaks to him personally. Look at verse 19. The author of these Proverbs says, "Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way." Verse 22, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old." Or verse 26, "My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways." You can hear the father's voice. These are no longer just impersonal words of wisdom. They're the instruction of a father to his loved son. And all those words have kind of the same theme. The father's telling his son, seek wisdom. Above all things, become wise. That is what his chief desire for his son is. Look again at verses 15 to 16. He says, "My son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself, yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things." Or again, look at verses 24 to 25. He says, "The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice." He speaks of the joy he will have if his son grows up to be wise. Not rich, necessarily. Not famous, necessarily. Not even successful, necessarily. But he says, if you are wise, my heart will rejoice. His advice can be summed up in verse 12 and in verse 23. In verse 12, he says, "Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge." And in verse 23, "Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding." And what I'd like to do with the rest of our time this morning is just look at those Proverbs in a little more detail, particularly that verse 12. "Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge." That's the heartbeat of this father as he writes to his son and as he writes by extension to us as well. He says, apply your heart to wisdom above all things. And there are three things, at least, to be learned from these father's words to his son. The first thing to note is seeking wisdom requires effort. Seeking wisdom requires effort. I don't know if you noticed that word in verse 12. Apply your heart to instruction. And that word translated apply speaks of deliberate action. It's personal activity. It's getting up and getting something. That's what the word means. Don't just wait for it to come to you. Apply yourself to get it yourself. In other words, the wise man writing these words is saying, we don't just drift into wisdom. You can't just sit back and expect to become wise just in the natural course of things. No, we drift into foolishness. We don't drift into wisdom. In fact, it's actually worse than that. Listen to what Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15 says. Proverbs 22, verse 15 says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. In that verse, what he's saying is, it's not just that we drift towards foolishness, we're born with it already there. A child's heart is bound up in foolishness, or foolishness is bound up in a child's heart. That is, by the way, almost the exact opposite of what our society teaches. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but what our society around us and what our schools teach, generally, is that naturally we are innocent and pure. And if only we were allowed to express ourselves freely, we'd be happy. We'd be content. It's only when nasty, tyrannical, power-hungry individuals or organizations come along and twist us and mold us into their image, that's when we become bad. That is what children are taught in schools and universities in our society. And you may have picked it up on the TV and in films, that if only we could be true to ourselves and be free to be who we want to be or who we are, then all would be well. If only there weren't people trying to twist us into their own image, systems, organizations, religions. Now, of course, sadly, the truth is that people can twist us into their own image. Organizations, religions, and all these things can do great harm when people are forced to do things which they shouldn't have to do. That is a tragedy of life. But that isn't what the Bible teaches. The Bible is not just one system amongst others. It's not just one religion amongst others. The Bible is about Christ. It's about Jesus. It's about a person. We're not preaching a system. We're not preaching a set of rules. That's not why we come to church to learn how to be a good Christian. That's not the point. We're learning about a person, an individual. His name is Jesus Christ, the same person who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to me, comes to the Father except through me. He says, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. And what the Bible teaches very, very clearly is the only way we can be truly happy, truly content, truly prosperous in the best sense of the word is by following Christ. Not by following our own heart. If we follow our own heart, that is the path to destruction. But if we follow our Creator, if we follow the one who loved us and died for us, that is the way to lasting peace and joy. And Jesus is really the personification of all these words of wisdom that we've been reading. He is the book of Proverbs, if you like, in human form. If you want to know what it looks like to live life the way the book of Proverbs teaches us to, look at Jesus. Look at his life. And he guides us in the life as it should be life, as it should be lived. As Jesus himself said, "I have come that you might have life and have it in all its fullness, have it in abundance." That's what true life really is. And it only comes through seeking Christ. Or as we might say from the book of Proverbs, it only comes through seeking wisdom. That is why the author of Proverbs says, seek wisdom above all things. Make that the pinnacle of your hopes to become wise. And as the New Testament teaches us, become wise through Christ. Because the truth is, all of us, I don't care who you are, whether you're watching online or here in the building, we're all following something. We're all following someone, even if that is only our own heart. Our natural inclination is not to follow Christ. It's not to listen to what he says. Our natural inclination is to listen to our own heart and to follow our own desires. That's why the author of Proverbs says, apply your heart to instruction. Don't rely merely on your own understanding. Don't just drift with the way the world takes you. But seek Christ. Seek wisdom with all your heart. And God himself says, you will seek me and find me if you seek me with all your heart. So that's the first thing about seeking wisdom. It requires effort. It requires a decision. It requires you to actually make steps to find wisdom. It won't just come to you. But that leads to the second thing we learn about wisdom. Wisdom, or seeking wisdom, requires listening. Seeking wisdom requires listening. Look again at verse 12. It says, apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. And let me ask you a question. Who do you listen to in life? Or to put it another way, who do you trust? Who are the trustworthy people or trustworthy person in your life who is your authority? Who are you following? Who do you trust to guide you safely through this life? Again, it is someone. There is someone you are listening to. There is someone you trust above all others. It could be yourself, or it could be any number of different people. Let me ask you a second question. That person, or that organization, or those people you listen to, do they truly love you? Do they truly care about you? Do they truly have your best interests at heart? Interesting question, isn't it? We listen to so many people. We're influenced by the TV, by films, by those around us. And yet many of those people don't truly love us. They don't truly have our best interests at heart. Oftentimes, they want something from us, and they don't really care about us, ourselves. There's a famous story in the Bible of King Rehoboam. Do you remember King Rehoboam? He was the son of King Solomon. Ironically, he was the son, most likely, who these words were spoken to. Quite likely, being the son of Solomon, who wrote much of the book of Proverbs. But when he became king after his father died, he was asked by the people, and they said to him, please make our load lighter. His father, King Solomon, had worked the people very, very hard, and they said, ease our burden, ease our load. Don't be as harsh as your father was. and he said he would go away to consider their request. And he asked the old men. He asked his old men who were his advisors, and he asked them what he should do. And they said, listen to your people. Listen to what they say. Make their load lighter. But then he went to the young men. He went to his cronies. He went to his friends. And he asked them, what should I do? And they said, don't listen to the people. Make their yoke harder. Make their burden harder. Make it even more difficult for the people. And they will respect you even more than they respected your father. And Rehoboam listened to the young men. And the kingdom was literally torn in two as a result. Now, out of those two sets of advisors, the old men and the young men, which ones do you think truly had Rehoboam's best interests at heart? Well, surely it was the older men, the wise men, the men who had lived longer, the men who had seen with their own eyes the dangers of foolishness. Those young men were probably more eager for more power and authority and recognition for themselves. They weren't truly interested in Rehoboam. They didn't have his best interests at heart. And that's the tragedy of life. So many of us listen to people who don't actually care about us very, very much. People who don't really have our best interests at heart. You remember the prodigal son in the parable Jesus taught, how he went away to a far country. When he had lots of money, he had lots of friends. And they were his friends while he had his money. But when his money ran out, so did his friends. And yet, who did he forsake? He forsook his father, who loved him, who cared for him, who had nurtured him. And he was more willing to follow the friends and the riches and the wealth than he was his own father, who loved him so dearly. That really is the essence of foolishness. Refusing to listen to those who love you most, to those who love you best. And chiefly, the essence of foolishness is refusing to listen to God, who loves us more than any father or mother can. That's why the book of Proverbs says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I don't know what you're feeling like this morning. Maybe here in the building or those watching online, you're feeling tempted to reject Christ. Perhaps the lure of the world around is strong, and you see the riches other people have. You see the popularity other people have. You see the success and the prosperity other people have, and you're tempted to go down that line, and you want some of that for yourself, and you're tempted to reject Christ and his word and what he says. But ask this question. Are the things that you're rejecting Christ for any more trustworthy than Christ is himself? Can you really trust those things more than you trust Christ? Again, our society says, follow your heart, follow your dreams, be true to yourself. But really, are you more reliable than Christ? Do you really sincerely believe that your own heart, your own feelings can guide you better than Jesus Christ? Do you really believe that? Do you believe that your heart can't deceive you? Have you never made mistakes in your life where you've gone down a line, you've followed your heart, you've done something which you thought was right at the time, or something you thought was the best thing for you, and you were horribly deceived? Surely we've all done that at some point. We've been led astray by our own desires. And yet so many people forsake Christ simply because their heart is leading them in a different direction. What foolishness. What craziness. Again, we live in a society which says, be free to express yourself in whatever way you please. If you feel like you're a woman and you're a man, then you're a woman. If you feel like you're a man, and you're a woman, then you're a man. If you love someone, feel free to express that love in whatever way you see fit. But surely we can see, if we look in with eyes of wisdom, that that's only going to end in disaster and catastrophe and lunacy. I read just the other week, year, of a woman who married her dog. It's true. There was a woman who had a ceremony to marry her dog. Another woman, I think it was a woman, or could be a man for that matter, either way, and they married themselves. They had a marriage ceremony for a relationship with themselves. But that's just the natural outcome of this sort of thinking. Follow your heart. Do what seems best to you. And we have the craziness of people marrying their dogs or even marrying themselves. And perhaps you say, well, that's extreme. Those are just extreme examples. But that is the logical end. That is the logical end of simply following wherever your heart leads you. Instead, listen. Listen to the wisdom of God's word. Listen to the wisdom of God who loves us, who cares for us, who wants what is truly best for us. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 26 says, "Whoever trusts his own heart is a fool." Whoever trusts his own heart is a fool. And do you hear God's heart? He's not condemning us merely. He's not judging us. He's not saying these things because he hates us. He's saying these things because he loves us and he wants us to find true life. And he says, you're not going to find it in your own heart. You're not going to find it by following your own instincts. You can only find it in me. And as you hear the Father's word in verse 19, you can hear God's voice as he says, "Hear my son and be wise and guide your heart in the way." Don't be guided by your heart, but guide your heart into truth and into wisdom. Sometimes God does say things we don't like. Sometimes God says things which hit us hard. But it's love which is willing to say the hard word. It's love which is willing to tell the truth even when it hurts. And we would be fools to ignore the hard things God has to say to us. So that's the second thing. Seeking wisdom requires listening. It requires listening to those who love us best. Most of all, it requires listening to God who loves us the most. But thirdly and lastly, the last thing we can learn from these verses is that seeking wisdom is the most precious thing we can seek. Nothing is more precious than wisdom. Look again at verse 15 and 16. The wise man here says, "My son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself, yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things." One of the things I've struggled with in preparing this message is the awareness that not all of us had a wise father or have wise fathers. Not all of us have a father who will rejoice if we are wise. Perhaps our fathers have passed away. Perhaps our fathers are still alive, but they're not a wise father. And far from rejoicing when we make wise choices, perhaps they ridicule and mock and don't provide the support that they should. Nevertheless, I think we can all relate to this desire, at least. This desire to have a father who is proud of us. A father who rejoices at the choices we make. A father who looks on us with pride and with love. I think we can all relate to that, can't we, regardless of the failings of our own fathers. It reminds me of a story I heard of a father and son in Spain who became estranged. They argued or something went wrong in the relationship. And the son ran away, and the father set off to find him. And he searched for months, but no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't find his son. And finally, in a last desperate effort to find him, the father put an ad in a Madrid newspaper, and his son was called Paco, and the ad read, "Dear Paco, meet me in the front of this newspaper office at noon on Saturday. All is forgiven. I love you. Your father." And apparently on that Saturday, 800 Pacos turned up looking for forgiveness and love from their father. But it illustrates the point, doesn't it? That yearning, that desire for a good relationship with your father or with your mother for that matter. And the good news is that although our earthly parents might not always be all they should be, all parents, at the end of the day, are ultimately imitations, however good or bad, of our heavenly Father. And so if you can't read these verses and hear them, as it were, from the lips of your own father or parent, perhaps you can hear them as words from God himself. Listen, as God says to you, "My son or daughter, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself, yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak good or right things." Isn't that wonderful to think that God speaks to us in this way? God, as it were, says to us, if your heart is wise, if you seek wisdom, I, God, will rejoice greatly. Perhaps you say that language is too extreme to speak of God. But again, do you remember Solomon? Solomon, the likely author of these words. Do you remember how when he first became king, God appeared to him in a dream? And God said to him, "Ask, what shall I give to you?" It's an amazing request, isn't it? God says to Solomon, "I'll give you whatever you ask for." And Solomon was a youngish man at this time. What would you ask for? If God came to you and said, "I'll give you whatever you ask," what would your heart desire? Well, this is what Solomon said. Solomon said in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 6, he says, "You have shown," speaking to God, "you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" Solomon didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for military success. He didn't ask for popularity. He asked for wisdom. And verse 10 says, "The speech pleased the Lord," that Solomon had asked this thing. God was pleased at Solomon's request. And does not that thought excite you? The thought that you can please the heart of God. That you can make choices in your life which brings joy to our Heavenly Father. That should excite you. That should be the greatest joy of our hearts, that we can bring joy to God by seeking wisdom. And that's just one of the blessings, though perhaps the greatest one, of seeking wisdom above all other things. As chapter 24, verse 3 says, "Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches." If you seek gold, it will corrupt one day. If you seek fame and glory and all the riches of this world, they will be taken from you one day. But wisdom lasts forever. I think it was Alfred Lord Tennyson, the famous poet, who says, "Knowledge comes, but wisdom lingers." The wisdom, or the preciousness of wisdom, far surpasses anything else that this world can offer. And I wish there was a way of conveying in words how much wisdom surpasses anything else this world has to offer. You can have all the health, wealth, prosperity you want, but that cannot actually bring you joy and happiness and contentment. We think it can. We deceive ourselves that it can. But look throughout history, the richest people haven't been the happiest people. The most prosperous people haven't been the most contented people. Could almost say the opposite is the case. And besides all that, all those things are snatched from us in death. But seeking wisdom, knowing Christ, grants us a contentment that no poverty, no pain, no hardship, not even death itself, can take from us. And that's why the Father's burdens in these verses is seek wisdom. Seek that above all things. And I'm just going to close with a poem which illustrates this point and the value of wisdom over anything else. And it's about a Persian king. I don't think it's a real Persian king. But it's about a king who had a signet ring. And on that ring was written a great word of wisdom, which was, "Even this shall pass away." And just sit and listen to this poem, which teaches us the value of wisdom over anything else. Once in Persia reigned a king who upon his signet ring graved a maxim true and wise, which, if held before his eyes, gave him counsel at a glance, fit for every change and chance, solemn words, and these are they, "Even this shall pass away." Trains of camels through the sands brought him gems from Samarkand. Fleets of galleys through the seas brought him pearls to match with these. But he counted not his gain, treasurer of the mine and main. "What is wealth?" the king would say, "Even this shall pass away." In the revels of his court, at the zenith of the sport, when the palms of all his guests burned with clapping at his jests, he amid his figs and wines cried, "O loving friends of mine, pleasures come, but not to stay. Even this shall pass away." Fighting on a furious field, once a javelin pierced his shield. Soldiers with loud lament bore him bleeding to his tent, groaning with his tortured side. "Pain is hard to bear," he cried, "but with patience day by day, even this shall pass away." Struck with palsy, sere and old, waiting at the gates of gold, spake he with his dying breath, "Life is done, but what is death?" Then in answer to the king fell a sunbeam on his ring, showing by a heavenly ray, "Even this shall pass away." Do you hear the wisdom? The things of this world do not last. Riches pass away. Popularity fades. Success is only for a moment. But Christ is forever. And if we have him, if we have wisdom, then nothing else can snatch that away. All other things pass away, but not Christ, not wisdom. And even death itself need not fear, need not be, the Christian does not need to be afraid of, because even death passes away for the believer. Because what did Jesus say? "He who believes on me, even though he dies, yet shall he live." Don't seek this world. Don't sell wisdom for the passing things of this life. But seek wisdom with all your heart. Know Christ, and you'll have no cause to regret it. And with those thoughts in mind, I've chosen as our final hymn number 844. 844, a hymn which really speaks of the blessing and benefit of a life lived in wisdom. a life which is lived in the fear of God. 844, happy the home where God is there and love fills every breast, when one their wish and one their prayer and one their heavenly rest. Happy the home where Jesus' name is sweet to every ear, where children early lisp his fame and parents hold him dear. So let's close by singing number 844.